You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Business of Practice podcast, where we focus on the business and human sides of equine veterinary medicine. In this episode, we're going to talk with Dr. Kashleen Dobeka about her cash-based practice startup model. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Grice, business consultant and former equine practice owner. The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you in 2025 by Care Credit. Dr. Kashleen Dobeka is a North Texas area native. She completed her undergraduate studies at Oklahoma State University, earning a BS in biochemistry and molecular biology, and then went on to earn her DVM from Texas A&M University in 2013. During her clinical year of veterinary studies, Dr. Dobeka was awarded the opportunity to train at Dubai Equine Hospital, one of the world's premier equine facilities. After graduation, she completed an ambulatory internship at Peterson and Smith Equine Hospital in Ocala, Florida. In 2014, Dr. Dobeka attended Options for Animals College of Animal Chiropractic and became certified by the board of the International Veterinary Chiropractic Association. In 2017, she completed the equine acupuncture course at the Qi Institute. In 2014, Dr. Dobeka opened a mobile equine practice, which has evolved over the years into what is now Restoration Ranch Veterinary Wellness. Outside of work, she is the mother of two young children and enjoys running a small ranch with her husband in Paradise, Texas. Welcome, Dr. Dobeka.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm excited. This is my first podcast.
Well, it'll be a good one. At the 2024 AAE convention, you gave an inspiring presentation on staying in equine practice. What inspired you to write a paper that you called the Stay Factor?
Yes, thank you. Thank you. It was so great to see you at that talk. And for me, it was a little bit full circle because I don't know if you remember this, but we actually met in 2014 at the Salt Lake City, Utah AAEP convention. And so that was really cool that you were also giving a talk that day in the same cohort of presentations. And that was neat. So to be fully transparent, I'm not really cut out for writing any kind of papers or research or anything of that nature. However, Dr. Sierra Guardi and I were given the opportunity to present at AAP in 2024. And if that meant writing a paper, we were gonna get it done. So the Stay Factor started back in 2023. Sierra and I were had the opportunity to give a presentation together at the Texas Equine Veterinary Association annual meeting that year. And that presentation was really focused on newer graduates and encouraging younger veterinarians to explore avenues and stay in equine practice rather than leaving, you know, immediately after an internship if it wasn't what they expected, or after an associate position that isn't going well. And so we really enjoyed that. And then from there, we were given the opportunity to talk at AAEP in 2024. And so we had to put this presentation into a paper. And so what we did was we actually kind of reverse engineered the concept. And it seems like for several years now, there's been a lot of talk and a lot of even research, which is great, done on what are all the reasons we're leaving equine practice? And so we kind of decided we wanted to reverse engineer that idea and talk about, you know, what has kept us in equine practice. And, you know, of course, we can really only speak for ourselves. However, there are papers we were able to to cite some written by you, Dr. Grice, that gave us some helpful statistics as far as looking at salaries, average salaries that have changed positively over the last decade, and, you know, reasons that have been a factor in other people starting to stay in equine practice. So that is how it came about. And yeah, we really just wanted to reverse engineer the concept of, you know, the sustainability in equine practice issue, and look at, you know, who, what, why, and how our generation of equine veterinarians have stayed in practice. Because Sierra and I both graduated in 2013. And when you look at our graduation year and the graduation years, you know, closely surrounding ours, it is not many that are remaining in equine practice. And so that's how it came about. Back to your initial question, what inspired the writing of this paper? I think at this stage in my career, I do feel not an obligation, but I feel inspired to do my part to encourage veterinarians in their first decade. And certainly, you know, even earlier than that, in the first few years, to stay in equine practice, and look at different, you know, think outside of the box. It's so unique to your specific stage of life and location, and your desires, you know, and your needs, you know, what you need to be making financially, based on your loans and other debt in life and things like that. And so there's really no cookie cutter answer for anyone, but I have seen lots of outside of the box thinking be very productive in keeping people in equine practice in the last decade.
Yeah, you know what I find amazing is some of the early people that made the practices that they needed for their lives, like you, like Dr. Gardia, are examples for those that have come after. And, you know, in the most recent AVMA AAEP report in 2024, you know, like 63% of the respondents were solo practitioners. More, and, you know, it used to be about 40. So many people have followed your example and said, okay, I need something different. And it's so encouraging when you see somebody else who has like taken the leap off the cliff and spread their wings and flown gracefully away, right? You know?
Yeah.
Like it allows other people to say, hey, I could probably do that too.
Yep.
The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you by Care Credit. Care Credit keeps equine veterinarians at the heart of care by providing horse owners with simple, budget-friendly financing options. By helping to bridge the gap between costs and care, Care Credit supports healthy financial relationships between veterinarians and their clients. Clients have a flexible way to pay over time for all types of care, and practices get paid in 2 business days. It's a payment experience everyone can feel good about.
In your presentation, you expressed how you felt about debt. And so you had a cash-based practice startup model. Can you tell us a little about that? Because I'm sure there's plenty of people that don't want to take on more debt.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wish that back in 2014, when this all started, I really wish that I had had the wherewithal or the organization or the forethought to keep, I guess, better records, not in the sense of like, sure, you know, we can pull the tax return, we can pull the tax documents and we can pull the medical records. But I guess I wish I had kept
a journal, a diary.
Yes.
How you were feeling about it. It would be
yes,
so cool.
Because here I am, you know, 12 years later talking about it. And so I wish I had kept better details. And I didn't ever plan on talking about this. I was just more concerned with paying loans and making some money.
You're just doing it.
Being this equine veterinarian that I'd gone to school to be. And so full transparency, I graduated veterinary school in 2013. So I still feel like I'm very young in my career. I guess I take that back. I still am looking at the rest of my career as a marathon and not a sprint. There's still a lot left to be done. But I do feel, I guess, a little older when I wake up every morning. But I did do an internship, and I learned in my internship in Ocala, Florida, that what I really wanted to do was ambulatory practice. And I was certainly not ready to jump ship on working with horses. And I also learned that I wanted to be back home in North Texas. I love to travel. I was excited to go to Florida. And then I was like, I have sacrificed a lot of time with family. And I wanted to stop missing out on so much family and, you know, longtime friends, things happening in their lives. So I decided that North Texas was where I wanted to be back. I spent the spring and the fall of 2014 applying to associate positions. I knew I wanted a job at an equine practice that at least involved some ambulatory work. So I don't think that 2014, 1 year out of vet school with an internship under my belt, Dr. Freeney at that time had any business starting a practice, but it truly became my only way to stay in equine practice, given my region, my location I wanted to be, and wanting to have at least some component of ambulatory or mobile practice to my career. And so after applying to jobs and not being willing to, I always want to be careful with my wording here. I was not willing to accept a position that paid lower than $50,000 of an annual salary. I wasn't ever offered any job positions. There was just not any that I was willing to take. I didn't see them keeping me in equine practice. And one of my mentors, who I am so thankful for, he told me, well, if you've decided you want to stay in North Texas, do not sign a non-compete at your first associate position. And I didn't even get to that point, to be honest, because there wasn't an associate position I was offered that I was ever willing to take. But it really made me think, okay, he's right. He said, statistically, most people, veterinarians or not, don't stay in their first ever job. Statistically, you are most likely to not stay there. So that was a huge piece of advice, and me not being able to find a position that I was willing to accept, it evolved into I started my own practice. I'm really glad I did it. I think I had blind courage. And I just did it, and I've never looked back. So I started with cash based because at the time I had read some Dave Ramsey books, and to be completely honest, I also think I didn't really believe in myself. My confidence wasn't really there, and I didn't want to financially commit to something if I didn't believe 100% that it was going to work. And so I just kind of did it. I had a used Stonewall SUV vet box that I purchased. I bought dental equipment, and I went to AAP Salt Lake City and met some of my distributors. And they told me about all of their new practice programs and deals that I could between those and AAEP deals together, I really I guess that's the only debt I really took on at that time was, some small new practice deals and programs from distribution companies.
So did you pay cash for your dental equipment and the Stonewall box?
I did.
Yeah,
I did. And I should have planned, if I had known that I was going to be 1 year out of veterinary school doing this, I probably would have started trying to save up more money. It's not like as an intern, you really have money to be saving anyway. You know, at that time, my internship salary was $26,000 a year. So I was really just skating by paying my rent and starting to think about trying to make some loan payments, things like that. So yeah, I did pay cash for those things. I actually had money left over when I did the Dubai Equine Hospital position that I did. I was paid at the time a significant amount of money. I think it was something like $5,000, and I had saved that miraculously. I bought my Stonewall SUV box used for $2,000. And then I got the Swiss float and speculum for, I think, the rest of that cash. Mm-hmm. And there I was. So I started doing just what I could. And then I started doing that in the fall of 2014. And then I went to AAP and I capitalized on some great deals. And then in the spring of 2015, it was like I was off and I never looked back. And I just grew my practice from there. I started saving. I lived with family for as long as I needed to. I really lived small. I think the only vacation I took that year, a friend on a whim was like, look, flights to Hawaii, if you purchase within the next 30 minutes are $300 and something and we'll stay in a hostel, another veterinarian. And we did. And I think that was the only trip I took that year. And I just really lived small and saved, and it worked out. I also did make an investment in animal chiropractic school. That was a pretty big purchase in 2014 for me. And I spent all of the money I had left over from finishing my internship. And I think I picked up some vaccine clinic type shifts in order to pay for that. So I really started my practice with, dentals and chiropractic and being able to offer the services I could. And I just slowly, as I had the cash for it, bought more and more equipment.
When you think about it, those things you started with are some of the most profitable things, because there isn't a lot of drug expense involved in them. And mm-hmm. so that was actually, you may not have planned it that way, but it was actually really, really smart as a way to start mm-hmm. out. What was the hardest thing, the most challenging thing about starting a practice?
For me, the most challenging thing, looking back, I found was doing every little thing and big thing on my own. Whether it was because I wasn't trusting someone else to do things for me, or whether I actually couldn't afford someone else, or I thought I couldn't afford someone else to do something and take it off my plate, doing all of the things for, I would say, 2.5 years in a row really did burn me out in some ways.
This is a big lesson for people to learn, because mm-hmm. you got burned out, right? Mm-hmm. And you finished your day and you had to do stuff still. Mm-hmm. And the stuff you had to do was not stuff that you, as the veterinarian, your skills were not needed to do it. People definitely need to hear that.
Yes. In hindsight, if I could go back, that was one of the most challenging things. What I was just doing every little thing, and it affected my life, because it was burning me out from answering the phone, even if it was a friend. I still, to this day, and this is not, I'm not the only equine veterinarian that feels this way. I know a lot of us have a little bit of a phone trauma.
Yeah.
We now keep our phones on silent, but if you hear the same ringtone you had back in your equine internship, like there's something that sets into your body and your nervous system that's like, what's coming in the next few hours of my life? So I still hate doing some of those tiny little tasks. So that was a hard thing for me. And then the second thing that was the most challenging about starting my own practice was learning the extent of my capabilities and learning how to set boundaries. In a larger practice or a practice with more staff, more horses can be helped. And small tasks can be delegated, even just something as simple as email this article to this person or, hey, follow up on this person and find out if we need to continue treatments or not. Get this contact information to this person so that they can get their horse hauled in somewhere. Little things like that. I found that my intentions were always good, but I began to overpromise and undeliver things, and that didn't sit well with me. And I quickly had to learn that as one person, even if I could physically help so many horses in a day, I couldn't follow through with the entirety of the case as thoroughly as I wanted to. And I needed to set better boundaries about what the extent of my capabilities were. And that's actually something that I'm glad I learned, because as the scope of my practice has evolved, I might have more people that are available to help me with small tasks. But through different seasons of life, pregnancy or, you know, infancy, having a newborn at home or a sick parent, you know, or even myself, like last year, I went through a lot of skin cancer doctor appointments and surgeries and follow-ups. And I have had to, you know, every week or month or year reassess what is the extent of my abilities and be okay with that. And, you know, set practice boundaries based on where I'm at and what's going on. Because when I don't, I start to overpromise and underdeliver, and it doesn't sit well with me. It also isn't a good practice builder for anyone.
Great advice. Is there any other advice you'd like to give to our listeners?
I think if you are considering a cash-based approach, take it seriously. Don't cut yourself short on, you know, how hard it is. Even if you don't have a huge financial investment, you definitely have a emotional and a intellectual investment. You're constantly going, even if you're not worrying, you're going to be thinking about your practice and planning, and all of that takes up a lot of energy. So take breaks and have realistic expectations on timelines of getting small tasks done and big tasks done. Don't get yourself so frustrated that you're feeling behind before you really even get started. And my one other thing I would say is, no matter what kind of veterinarian you are, decide for yourself and your season of life what is sustainable for you, and reevaluate that every year. What was sustainable for me in 2014 is not what was sustainable for me in 2020. And I've actually surprised myself sometimes in certain life seasons. Actually, more work is more sustainable than others, because horses help me cope through certain difficult seasons of life. And so constantly reevaluate that and create your own definition of sustainable practice and honor it. For me, sustainability in equine practice means keeping the horse as the hero, and it is never me as the hero. And I know that sounds really boring to a lot of people. Like, of course, we all love to be the one to swoop in and, you know, get the horse winning again or get the choke resolved. Or, yeah, of course, absolutely. That's all really, really fun. But what's more sustainable for me is that I'm not the hero. My worth and my value as a human have nothing to do with my skills as a veterinarian. Any tool or skill or knowledge that I have as a veterinarian, I will never gatekeep. They can be passed on to another veterinarian so that that person can swoop in and pick up where I left off. And I think that helps keep things really sustainable. It's my job to use those tools. It's the horse's job to respond to those tools and do their job, their body to do their job. And that keeps the horse as the hero and not me. And when I look at it that way, I'm able to keep going and not get overwhelmed with imposter syndrome or, you know, negative case outcomes or anything like that.
I love what you said about that your value as a human being does not lie in your abilities as a veterinarian. And I think sometimes veterinarians have a hard time with that when they, you know, work is hard and clients can be tough and they start to feel undervalued very much. And so thank you for bringing that up because it is such an important thing to keep in mind. Mm-hmm. Absolutely important.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Dobeka.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. I hope that there's, you know, some sentence in there that can be helpful to someone.
Oh, there's more than one. There's more than one. And thank you all for listening today for the Business of Practice podcast. And a big thanks to our sponsor, Care Credit. And to all my listeners out there, be brave, embrace change, and remember, you have value beyond being a veterinarian.